welcome to episode 20 of Design EDU Today, the podcast series discussing topics concerning the state of interactive design education at institutions of higher learning. I am your host, Gary Rosance, Assistant Professor of Graphic Design at the University of Maryland, Baltimore County.
Today's guest is Damian Borba. Damian is a product manager for Project Comet on the Creative Cloud team at Adobe. He is based in the company's San Francisco office and has more than 16 years of experience with technology, interactive media, design, business, community engagement, and training. Before Adobe, he worked as a developer advocate, first for BlackBerry and then Braintree PayPal, traveling the world to engage with developers and startups. He also ran Action Creations as an interactive agency based in San Diego, designing and developing apps for clients including Oakley, 20th Century Fox, World Surf League, Nike, and many more. Damian is committed to the growth of new innovators, has taught design and programming at UCSD, as well as his own training programs focused on design thinking and mobile development, reaching hundreds of developers, designers, and entrepreneurs, learning empathy, innovation, and technology drive his work and his personal life. In addition to being a software engineer focused on UX and web technologies, Damian is a surfer, design thinker, and father. Welcome, Damian.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
So before we launch into questions about formerly Comet, now Adobe Experience Design, I want to get a little more background on you. What does a product manager for software built from the ground up, such as Adobe Experience Design CC and formerly Project Comet, do? What's your role?
That's a big question. First and foremost, I think it's the best job I've ever had. I'm working with a very, very talented team of brilliant engineers, designers, other product managers. So it's being a blast. But daily, to answer your question, we talk to customers, we plan the future of the product, we build empathy pretty much every single day, not only with customers but also with product members, because in our team we have to be negotiating everything that we think has a higher priority with everyone. We cannot enforce things. We have a lot to say, but we cannot kind of dictate and like enforce things. It's a job of making sure it's the best for the customer, and it's also very healthy for the team internally.
Is working on a brand new product, like Experience Design, is that different than working on existing products like Photoshop? Do you have like different goals, or are they, once you get started, the same?
I think so. The way I see it is other tools, let's say well-established tools like Photoshop and Illustrator, they have a very solid foundation that was built over the years, and now they keep adding new functionality over time, and that's there. What we are building now for Adobe XD, formerly known as Project Comet, as you stated, is the foundation. So we are working super hard for over a year now on a solid foundation for it. As soon as the foundation is there, then we'll be able to add more features and go a little bit faster. But building a foundation that we plan to stay relevant for years and years is super, super challenging and rewarding at the same time.
What does the Experience Design team consist of? Designers, engineers, graphic design? What are the different components of the team?
Yeah, I think we have three main teams working on Project Comet, not Adobe XD. I'll keep calling it Project Comet for a while. Sorry. It's a transition for us as well. We have product, which is my team, a group of product managers. Mm-hmm. We have engineers. Like I said, very, very talented engineers who worked on different tools in the past, and they are amazing. And we also have designers. We have a group called Experience Design. That's a coincidence internally in Adobe. And this team works with all the different tools to make sure the design language is consistent and we explore the right things. And like I said, it's shared with other teams as well. So we have these three main groups working together.
So how do they interact on a day-to-day basis? Do they have their separate tasks, you know, and split out and come back? Are they constantly working with each other?
Yeah, we're constantly working with each other. We have 2-week sprints. So we focus on some user stories and some tasks that have to happen in 2 weeks. So at every 2 weeks, we define those and then we tackle those without bigger interruptions. Then the way things start before they get to execution in the sprints, we have product team, like my team, talking to customers, validating some early ideas. Sometimes we work with the designers in XD, the experience design group, to kind of create some mock-ups and some ideas for us to validate. Then we validate that, then we go back and polish, and then we talk to engineers to make that happen. But sometimes it really depends. Sometimes we have engineers working with us since the early concept, because the way this is presented to the user can impact their work. So it's a very integrated process.
I think that's one of the things that students, especially from the design perspective, they just don't expect this team mentality and working alongside these other people. And so it's good to get that reinforcement from other people.
Awesome. Yeah, it's a very collaborative work. We're not trying to dictate things. We're not spending too much time on one thing. We really validate, adapt, and go back and iterate. So it's a very iterative process.
Okay. So as an interactive and user experience design educator, I never thought about having students design software interfaces. So I can't imagine that there are a lot of entry-level designers with that type of experience. So when you're picking interactive designers for the team, what type of skills and experiences are you looking for from those designers?
Yeah, I think the first thing we look for is drive and excitement and focus, something that they care. And that really shows if we talk to young people or like people trying to work with us, it's really obvious. We feel that excitement on day one. I think number one rule is like care about the thing you're trying to do. It's your life and it's gonna be there for a long time. The other thing is really focus on understanding people. We're doing this for people. Everything is around people. It's really centered around humans. So try to work with people, try to understand people, learn how to build empathy. In the end, the execution of a UI design, the polish part of it, is just one piece of the puzzle. We have a lot more involved. We have to make sure it works. And if it doesn't work, it's our fault, right? It's not going to be a good product for people. So learn how to understand and work with people.
Yeah. Is there a certain type of visual work that you would like to see in an interactive designer's portfolio?
I would say that, again, of course, having the capability and the ability to polish UIs and execute well is one part of the whole process. I would say nowadays material design and flat design is really being used a lot. So I would say focus on those things, simplifying the UI, avoid like complex gradients and shadows, all those things that were from kind of the past. But I believe personally that will come back at mm-hmm. one point in the future. I would say like look for references. For me, design is reference, right? Like look for references, not only with UIs, but also in the world. And if you do something that works and people can achieve their tasks successfully, that's a successful UI. If it's beautiful in terms of execution, but it doesn't solve the problem, that's a horrible UI, right? It's wrong.
Yeah, well, that's try to convince somebody just starting out. of that. Well, that's not true. You can convince them. Their first tendency is to make it beautiful. The idea about usability comes after the fact.
No, yeah, that should be first.
Yeah. All right. So now on to Adobe's experience design, formerly Project Comet.
Okay.
I feel that you and your team hit the nail on the head when it came to creating a prototyping tool for interactive designers. So now that I don't have to teach students an awkward, time-consuming process or code that's hard to learn, I can focus on the instruction of visual design. So how did Adobe come to the realization interactive designers needed this tool?
Yeah, I think it goes back to the same point I made in the very beginning. It goes back to building empathy, right? We are really open and connected to the community. So a couple, let's say almost 2 years ago, we started investigating ways of improving Photoshop and Illustrator for UX design. You see a lot of improvements there. For example, in Photoshop now you have art boards, in Illustrator you have amazing SVG exports, so things moved forward there. But we quickly realized that those tools, they're amazing, but they were not initially designed for UX design, where you have to come up with a wireframe and then polish your design, quickly build a prototype to test and see if it's relevant. Not only test, but also like plan your flow, the way the screens move and everything. And then share that with your users, your stakeholders, and then get feedback and go back to your design to make the changes. Nowadays, this process is really broken. If you check what's existing in the market right now, it's you have to do your design in one tool, and then you have to export your images and import in a separate tool, and then generate your prototype. It's a very broken process, especially when you have to go back and edit your designs. So that's where the problem I think got a lot bigger, and we had lots of meetings, lots of discussions, and we decided to do something from scratch that would be relevant for the years ahead.
Once the idea was conceived, it's like, hey, we see this broken process, or we think there's a broken process, and we want to fix it. How did you begin to make that a reality? Did you start observing and interviewing interactive designers, like, going to design firms and
Yeah,
say, hey, let's watch you?
since day one, we interviewed people, we observed people, we watched them, and we also built empathy by playing with the existing tools ourselves. So we used those three methods, and we keep doing that until now. And that's how we can really build the right empathy and feel the pain that they had. Once we feel the pain, we were able to again get together and sketch ideas, write some quick prototypes using code, and then some prototyping tools, and just presenting that to users, to customers, to validate things and move forward slowly. We started with this big vision of the end-to-end workflow, from all the way from idea design all the way to sharing and learning, and having that as a very seamless process, frictionless process. And I think we're very, very early. Today we have this public preview out there, but this is just the beginning.
Oh yeah, that's important to remember because I've been following this for a while now since it was Project Comet, and this is step one.
Yes, no, definitely. We have a big plan ahead of us. We have monthly releases. We're talking to users pretty much every single day. The whole team is exposed to users, all the feedback we get. We use a mechanism to not only file bugs from the community, but also expose and let people vote on things they want as feature requests. And we have an internal backlog of things we prioritize, our user stories. And as of now, until now, everything's super aligned. So it means we can change at any time if we see the need based on feedback.
All right. So once you started interviewing and observing designers, What were some of the bigger surprises you discovered about their working process?
There was a lot during the process. One thing that I heard, I was not there actually, but I heard, we know that people really need to repeat content a lot. Like, for example, if you're building a list of results on a mobile app, you have to copy and paste the items, the cells, and then you have to adjust the padding. And then if you need to export different versions, you have to change every single one of them. It's very hard to get, like, you can use symbols and everything in other tools, but you can't have those symbols super customized. It's a very painful process and repetitive. So we came up after that, after seeing that pain, we came up with a repeat grid tool where you can easily select the items you want to repeat. Just pull a handle down and you get all the items repeated. All the styles are global and content can be unique. So you can have unique images, unique text to make the content more realistic. And we're even investigating the next steps, which is like bringing real data to feed these grids.
Yeah, when you were, and so again, back to the, when you were like doing this initial user research, did you get a sense for how many people were approaching design? I kind of look at it, there's like two ways you can do a static mock-up, and there's prototyping apps out there that you can import these into, or you can do the good old fashioned, just, you know, get this thing into a frame, you know, a CSS framework, and test it that way. Did you get a sense of which was used more in the industry?
Yeah, we saw in our analytics, we saw, and also like seeing the industry very closely, we saw people moving to different tools when they needed faster UI design. And when we were talking to customers, we were trying to close that psychological distance, right? Like you can show you can tell someone something, but if they don't really touch that or experience that, that psychological distance is really big. So we were trying to make that more realistic. So in a lot of cases, we were presenting our prototypes and they were really playing with them to get this distance smaller and smaller.
But initially, when you're trying to solve that problem, for, you know, the experience design, CC was trying to solve this problem. I think designers before this, approached it, I'm wondering how many of them were actually just doing it painstakingly with HTML and CSS, which are, you know, to kind of get the prototype, or were they just doing static mockups in Photoshop or Illustrator or something like that?
Yeah, and also like in other tools, like from other companies, we see that a lot. And we saw them working, we saw the pain points there. And it's, yeah, some people like to use code because it's kind of where they're most comfortable at, but it really depends.
Okay.
In the beginning, I was telling that it's a very broken workflow in Adobe XD. You don't even notice. You just keep your pace exploring things. You don't have to worry about pre-planning everything like most designers do. Like, designers are different than developers, right? They don't plan everything up front. They like to explore. They like to go to new places and try things. And I think Adobe XD gives that opportunity to UX designers.
Okay. I don't know if you've worked with other projects or you can see other projects within the Adobe family, but how is the working process for interactive designers different than those who were focusing on print design? Did you get a chance to see those two designers side by side?
Yeah, I think the biggest difference, in my personal opinion, is that print is you have one opportunity to make it right. It's it's one chance. It's printed, so that's it. There's no chance to fix or adjust things. And when you're working with websites, mobile apps, you can go back and iterate and change things on the fly. For example, we have monthly releases for Adobe XD. We have our prototype. Our sharing site is based on the web, so we can push things to change at any point. So there's this big difference. One is kind of limited, and the other one is infinite. You can have a lot of iterative things happening there.
Yeah, and I think that's the hardest thing for my students to realize is when you're in a design program, you're doing print and web, and print's so final. But I tell them, like, you know, when they design their website, that's you are just now launching with version one.
Totally. There's, yeah.
You know, how is this going to iterate out over time? And that's something that it takes some time for designers to get used to.
Totally. And it takes a lot of pressure off as well. Like, you don't have to worry too much. Okay, this is final. I cannot do any mistakes. I think it allows you to make mistakes, because by making mistakes, you take higher risks, but at the same time, the reward is a lot higher if things work. So I think just for us, we released this public preview now, but this is just the beginning. Yeah. We're going to learn. We're exposing this early because we want to make sure that's something that has the right value for people. I think the word value is really important here. We want to make sure people become better designers and they create successful experiences by using Adobe XD.
I'm thinking about back to the users, and I'm just curious if there, once you were doing like that initial consultation, initial figuring out, what were some of the things that were being requested that kept coming to the top that you decided to include first?
Yeah, I would say this seamless workflow where we could start with a design, a high fidelity design, then jump to prototype to convey your story, then share to gather feedback and validate. And once things need to change, it's easy to go back and make those changes. I think that was the big, big picture. And in terms of, like, for example, design, we had lots of different things, prototyping, same, and then sharing the same. So we have, I believe we have the foundation there for these three scenarios. Mm-hmm. And now we're going to keep building on top of it.
Okay. So that's interesting. How you split it up, and you got the three scenarios. So you've got the high fidelity mock-up, you've got the prototyping workflow, and what did you define the third?
Sharing, like
sharing.
You can
okay.
Share that online or record a video, and then you can get feedback.
Yeah, no, you see, that's the one part that in design education we don't send these out to the clients. We technically are the own clients.
Oh, so, I see.
So that's why that one was like, wait a minute, we don't do that step. It's more internal. We want to be able to look at it for ourselves. So now that the product is out to market, I have just a couple of questions about roadmap questions about where you think some of these things are going to go. Okay. So the first one is in regards to responsive design. So it seems like with XDCC, you'll still have to create multiple mockups for multiple screen dimensions. Is there anything in the works of, you know, like, will those be able to reflow? Like you make it in one size and then change the artboard and maybe like the content will reflow within it. Is that something that's even possible?
Yeah, that's totally on our roadmap. But we, like I said, we're building the solid foundation first.
Yeah.
So until we get there, we still have a lot to do. We have, for example, we're working on layers in a very special way. We're researching that for a long time. Same for color picker, gradient, more control over prototypes, scrolling on prototypes. So we have all these things that have a higher priority based on the research we do. Pretty much all the time, but adaptive design, responsive design is something that's definitely on the roadmap. I don't have a specific date.
Oh, that and that's okay.
Yeah, but we are aware of that for sure.
Yeah, no, it's nice to know that it's being thought of.
Oh, totally.
Yeah, that's exciting. Okay, so when you're creating this when you're creating software, you're obviously doing some user testing on how the people use the software. Like, what does that usability testing look like? I mean, do you get people come in and, you know, have cameras set up and you're recording them using it so you can watch how they go through things, or is it by
Yeah.
anecdote?
Yeah, I think every team does it differently. In our case, as product managers, we just meet our customers in 1 hour, 2 hour meetings, and we just talk to them. We didn't do anything at that level yet for Adobe XD. We have analytics in the product, so we can see the big picture of some things that we consider, like, let's call it user success on different tasks, and then we can analyze that over time. We can also do some A/B testing here and there on some things we want to test on a quantity level. But what I personally really like, and I'm a big advocate of, quality research. So talking to users, like segmenting your audience and then trying to identify different types of people that represent that audience and go after them, talk to them. And because if you see things showing up, let's say you're in interviewing three or four designers in the same audience, and if the same thing comes up four times, it means there's a big chance it's the same for all the others, the big, big audience. So it's really a matter of balance, but we're investing a lot on quality research for Adobe XD.
That's exciting, because that's, again, one thing, now that I'm, like, you know, as a design educator going back in the classroom, we don't get to do that. We don't, there's not a lot of way that we can actually really go out and fully test things as we work. And it's great. It's great to hear about the process, what the professionals are doing.
Yeah, well, why not? You can't do it.
Well, first, it depends on what it is. This program is going to actually kind of help solve a little bit of that, but prior to this program, if they're doing a website, they had to fully, and they're a visual designer, they had to fully code the thing, you know, for it to be able to be tested. Otherwise, it's, you know, how do you test a static mock-up? Like,
not if you have a prototype built in Adobe XD.
Yes, that's what I say. now we'll be able to actually focus on that, where before, you know, there was such a steep learning curve to learn how to get a prototype out that we spent more time teaching how to prototype than we did on the actual visual. Well, everybody's different. I'm just explaining my anecdote.
Okay.
And so in general, let's use print design. You know, yes, you could make a book and you could have people test it and look at it and you could see how they work with it. But it's almost at that early stages, it's more valuable to give them, say, okay, let's stop and let's, like, go on to the next experiment. Mm-hmm. You know, it's better to iterate through things and try different things than it is to, like, really stop and, like, assess what you did, because I think quantity is really important at those early stages. And so that's another reason why I'm excited at this, is because now this gives us a chance to try 50 different ways to animate a button. Instead of just, like, spending so much time in the prototyping, we don't get to test out the visual. And I think this is one thing that's going to solve that.
Yeah, I think it's important to highlight that the goal should be, in my opinion, should be not focusing on, like, the different types of animations that you can have in a button, but the 50 ways you can make a customer succeed on that task, right? So that should be the focus.
Yes. No, I agree with that one. I don't know why I threw out the word animation, but...
No problem.
Yeah. Well, you know, because again, it's something that there are not a lot of ways out there for designers to really, and students to really, like, make an animation, test that animation to see if it does help improve the user experience.
Totally. And you mentioned print a lot in the beginning. I think this is a new era, right? This is a new time, like, print is important, is relevant, but we see more and more companies and different entities talking to their customers via apps and via websites, and this is a new time.
And I'm excited for it, and I'm excited for this project. Damien, before I let you go, is there anything you are working on that you would like to share? Or something you want to promote personally or within Adobe?
I would really like to see your students and students all over the place playing with Adobe XD to convey their stories. And if you share your prototypes online, please send us, like, you can tweet about it. And if you use the hashtag #PoundAdobeXD, the whole team here can see it. And if you have any feedback, any kind of feedback, positive or negative, please send us on adobexd.uservoice.com. That's how we collect all the feature requests and bugs. And yeah, this is super exciting. I think you guys, educators, have the best job in the world, which is helping people to get from point A to point B. And you learn so much, and that's the most rewarding job in the world, in my opinion.
Yeah, and I know of me personally, that's what I'm going to be doing this summer is, I mean, because we're already in the middle of the semester, it's actually half over already. So I'll show them and I'll let them know that it's available, but it's over the summer. I'll, you know, sit down, teach myself, you know, work with the program. And then next semester is when you'll see, I bet, you know, starting back up in the fall is when you'll see a lot of people adopting this into the classroom.
Perfect. And we're people just like you guys. So, just talk to us. We're really open and we really want to make sure this product helps you all the way from idea to prototype and share and all that.
All right. And so, maybe do you have any, final piece of advice you would like to give design educators that we didn't cover today?
Yeah, I think, like, it's hard, but go back to your like go back to being a kid, you know, like, be curious instead of trying to force things. Just when you talk to people, just ask, like, why, even if you know the answer, like, if you have your vision of that answer, keep asking why. You'll be surprised.
Well, that's all we have time for today on episode 20 of Design EDU Today. I want to thank today's guest, Damian Borba, for being so generous with his time. I want to thank the audience for listening, and I want to thank the Design EDU Today hosting sponsor, DigitalOcean, and CDN sponsor, Fastly, for making the hosting and distribution of these podcasts possible. Finally, I want to thank the AIGA and the AIGA Design Educators community for their generous support of my research that led to this podcast series. If you want to discover more about the Design EDU Today podcast and read the session notes and transcripts, visit us on the web at designedu.today. You can also follow us on Twitter at @designeduToday, like our Facebook page, or subscribe to this podcast through the iTunes store. Thank you for listening to Design EDU Today.